All right, let's call Senate Finance to order that today is Thursday, April 4th. With us is Co-Chair Kelly, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Faircloth. So we have a quorum to get started this morning. I did want to take up the capital budget the first thing, and I apologize for the delay. We're waiting on a couple of technical amendments to be made to the language section. That's taken a little longer than anticipated, so I apologize for that. We do not have the amendments just yet, so I think we'll go ahead and proceed with the other items on today's agenda, and then when the amendments come, we'll go back to the capital budget at that time. The amendments are nothing big, so nothing to get too excited about. It's just some minor changes. I think there's three or four amendments total. So why don't we finish our discussion on House Bill 77 that we had started yesterday, and the commissioners are both back. I appreciate you guys coming back again today, and we can finish our discussion and questions that the members may have on that, and then I'd like to set that bill aside for now and until we can decide what we're going to do with House Bill 77. And Senator Dunleavy, welcome. So if we could have the Commissioner of DNR and Commissioner of Fish and Game come join us at the table here. Thank you for joining us again this morning. And I know we had a lot of discussion on this bill yesterday. We had a lot of public testimony on this as well yesterday. At this point in time, I just wanted to give the committee members an opportunity to ask questions on maybe some things that they'd heard during the public testimony or that maybe didn't get answered yesterday. Senator Olson, did you have additional questions for the commissioner on the House Bill 77? Otherwise, I'll go to Senator Faircloth if you want.
That's fine, too. Okay. Unless you want to have I was going to have the commissioner of DNR go ahead and make some opening statements as to
okay.
his information that he's great. Gathered since yesterday and his views on the bill. Hopefully, he's been enlightened, but if he hasn't, we'll try to enlighten him.
All right, that's a good
or
place.
We'll be enlightened. One of the two, Commissioner.
That's a good place to start. Commissioner Sullivan?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Olson, I always look for the opportunity to be enlightened by the committee members, which is usually what happens when I testify. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify this morning. For the record, my name is Dan Sullivan. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. For the record, Cora Campbell, Commissioner, Department of Fish and Game.
And for the record, Wynn Menefee, Chief Operations, Mining, Land, and Water.
So, Mr. Chairman, we did want to take the opportunity just to address some of the questions and comments that came up yesterday, particularly during the public comment period. My team was listening in on, I think a number of us were, thought that the many good comments, good discussions yesterday, we certainly have a strong respect for many of the people who were making comments. We've been working closely on this issue, actually, with, for example, Tiana Chiefs. Obviously, Rick Halford has a lot of respect throughout this building and throughout Alaska. So we wanted to take the opportunity to just address some of these rather quickly and then answer additional questions. I did want to begin by just mentioning the effort with regard to permitting reform. This is really, we're kind of into our third year on this with regard to permitting reform, modernization, making our systems more efficient, timely, and certain. Very strong bipartisan support from the legislature over the last 2 years across the whole host of areas that we've been making good progress on. And I think it's important to underscore whether it's this bill, our previous bills from last legislature that were passed, the capital budget that have been passed previously, operating budget, we believe, and I can guarantee, at least from our perspective, that this is about all Alaskans. Individuals, small businesses in particular, So much of the permitting reform, people are saying, hey, this is all about Pebble. In every testimony we do, this is all about Pebble. It's not about Pebble. That's not the lens through which we're looking at this. Maybe some people think that's the case. It's not. I can tell you that's not the case. We know that's a controversial project. They're going to have to go through some very, very tough permitting if and when they ever decide to move forward with permitting. But this bill and the other bills and what the legislature's done in the last 2 years from our perspective is not, we don't view it through that lens. So I just wanted to make that clear. So I think the next issue, and Commissioner Campbell can talk to it in more detail, but this would not diminish protecting fish habitat from our perspective in any way. We are fully committed on this. We did double check. Senator Hoffman had questions about the 33 reservations that we've adjudicated in the last 3 years, more than the state has adjudicated in its entire history. So I think we have a pretty strong record on doing that. We double-checked those numbers. Most of those have been from DNR to Fish and Game, and almost all of them have been focused on protecting fish habitat. And again, I would say that's part of the strong bipartisan effort that we've gotten from the legislature to get us the funding to help us do that. Certainly a backlog of those reservations, and I think we've made very substantial progress on that in 3 years, which is a demonstration of our commitment to protecting fish habitat.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, if I might, as long as we're on the topic of fish and fish habitat, I listened to the public comment from the hearing yesterday, and I heard people very seriously concerned that this bill somehow reduces the protections for fish and fish habitat. And as I testified yesterday, HB 77 does not in any way affect Fish and Game's Title 16 authorities and responsibilities to protect fish and fish habitat. It doesn't in any way change the DNR statutes that require DNR to consult with us and consider impacts to fish and fish habitat when they're issuing any type of a water use authorization. So I don't want to repeat everything that I said yesterday, but one thing that I thought was very notable about the comments is that there were a lot of comments acknowledging Alaska's world-class fisheries, acknowledging the sustainable management of those fisheries. And I just want to be clear on the record that that system remains in place upon passage of this bill, that all those protections remain in place upon passage of this bill, and our involvement is the same. The question came up yesterday as well about why the fiscal notes are zero if the department plans on taking a role in partnering with non-governmental entities that are interested. And so I want to clarify on that we have staff in what we call our water shop who are tasked with these types of duties already. They're already reviewing every water reservation that DNR is processing. They're already partnering with the public. They have these duties. And so because we have that role in each application anyway, our thought was that those existing staff could absorb any requests that we would get, any additional requests that we would get from partners to work with them. The other concern that I heard that I wanted to address was actually from some of our partners and some of the folks that have spent time, money, and resources gathering data for water reservation applications. There seemed to be a concern that that data would no longer be usable upon passage of this bill, and I just want to clarify that that's not the case. All that good data and information that has been gathered will be used. They can come to the agency, ask that we take on that application, and we'll review each and every one of those, and that good data that's out there that has been gathered can continue to move forward in the process and be used for the same purpose that it was gathered for. There seemed to be a concern among folks that trying to find an agency to work with would be a real obstacle. And I think what I would say on that is that if a water reservation is going to be processed by DNR, it essentially has to be reviewed and approved by DNR and by Fish and Game. And I really think that for folks that want to be part of this process, it's more efficient to meet with and partner with the department up front so that you can assure that any data that you want to gather is going to meet the standards of eventual review. So I don't believe that this is an obstacle. I believe that it actually is a more efficient process. Also, several of the comments I heard yesterday seem to feel that having a water reservation is the only way to ensure that water remains in the streams to protect fish and fish habitat. And I touched on this yesterday, but I just want to say again that any time that DNR issues a water use authorization, we at Fish and Game have the ability to review that, to talk about an amount of water that needs to stay in the stream for the fish, and DNR takes those into account when they put conditions on the water authorizations that they issue. And we also, again, have a separate ADF&G fish habitat permitting process where we can require that fish and fish habitat be protected. So in no way is an official water reservation required if you want to leave water in the streams to protect fish and fish habitat. That is not the only way to get to that result. And I just wanted to make sure that was clear. Thank you.
And Mr. Yes. Chairman, I was just going to address a few more of the other additional issues. So one of the other issues that came up was the issue of public participation. And from our perspective, what HB 77 does, it certainly doesn't diminish, and we don't want public's ability to participate on any of the issues laid out in the bill diminished. What we're trying to do is encourage more participation up front to address concerns, and I'll just give an example here. This bill, actually, there's a provision, didn't get a lot of attention yesterday. It clarifies our ability and authority to issue preliminary best interest findings. And the whole idea there is to actually get a preliminary BIF out to the public, so there's two opportunities for public comment on a BIF, a preliminary and then the BIF. So one of the provisions in here is clearly focused on ensuring that we have the statutory authority to do more public notice. And the public notice requirements are not changed. One thing I did want to mention, we didn't get the opportunity to do it, but we have worked quite hard, particularly at DNR in the past couple of years, to make sure that on public notice, particularly in more of the rural areas, that we're doing a better job. So I'll give two examples that are pretty recent. We had a draft area plan for the Yukon area that had been out for public notice for quite some time. TANNA chiefs reached out to us and said, hey, we've had a lot going on. We haven't had the opportunity to really look at this. The public notice period is ending next week. Can you guys come up here, brief us, extend that public notice period? Because we're not ready. And we said, sure, we did that. The public notice period is still running. It's several months now that we've extended it because we want to make sure we get the public input from that organization in particular with regard to Yukon area plan. That's an example. We're doing something similar right now with the Bristol Bay area plan. They had written us, asked us to get out to the different communities. They said they wanted it a broad number of public meetings. We've been in correspondence with them. We'll extend that public notice period. So we've been working very hard on making sure when people see 30-day public notice, they think, oh, that's it. And we've been trying to make sure that from our perspective, the input is what matters, not the 30-day deadline. And what we've been trying to do certainly over the course of the last couple of years is to make sure that that happens. And so we will certainly continue that. There is this issue that came up on the eligibility for
on that point.
Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when I heard the testimony yesterday, I think that that was the crux of the testimony. Overwhelmingly, people felt that Section 40, by the elimination of quote unquote a person to reserve water rights being taken out of the statute, that is the crux of the issue, and You know, I think that you had testified and others agreed that the water rights for individuals is what our Constitution was all about. And I believe that that is the one and only section that needs the most scrutiny, Mr. Chairman. And I say this because we had received a letter from NANA, a multimillion-dollar corporation, from Murray Green, who is the chairman or the president and CEO of NANA. And they are a profit corporation, Mr. Chairman, one of the largest, probably the third largest corporation, native corporation in the state. And they don't take positions of this magnitude very lightly. But the letter to the governor on March 30th basically states that Section 40 would eliminate the ability of, quote, a person to reserve water rights under the existing statute. Alaska Native Corporations, or ANCSA corporations, created pursuant to the Claims Act, as well as other entities and individuals, are eligible to apply to reserve water rights. But under this language, they would not be. And, you know, I think that that, as well as other individual persons' access to reserve water rights and go to the state of Alaska should be allowed, instead of bypassing the state of Alaska and pursuing their rights through the courts. The people of Alaska deserve better than to be cut off by the state of Alaska through the inclusion of Section 40 and their right to government and to the one thing that that is most important under this legislation is water and their access to water and their rights to water. And by eliminating them as a person, it seems to me that you are going contrary to the rights of the Constitution. And I think that Senator Halford, when he came to the table, I think that was the crux of his message. Why would we, as a state, want to eliminate people's right to testify, to try to get water rights? Why eliminate the ability of, quote, a person? We should not be doing that here today. And the state of Alaska should not even, the administration should not even be asking us to do that. The Constitution allows us to do that. And for us to reduce the rights of the citizens of this state is not what I was elected to. I need to protect those rights for the people to get access to water and to present those to the state of Alaska. And if the state of Alaska wants to review their rights and they are not allowed, then so be it. We will live with that. But don't cut off the rights of Alaskan citizens to present to its state its access to water, and eliminate that so that the only recourse they have is to go through the courts. We should not be limiting people's rights, citizens' rights, in the state of Alaska to access water. And if they're not doing it lawfully, then you as the commissioner can determine that. But to slam the door in their face and say, no, you will not be allowed, which is the interpretation that I believe the testimony, the vast testimony at this table yesterday was all about. We heard from probably 90% of the testimony was against Section 40 and wanted to get their right to its government to address their water rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution. And I guess my question is can we continue to work on this legislation and don't throw out the baby with the bathwater that was referred to yesterday, and work forward and eliminate Section 40. And I think that would address 90 to 95% of the concerns of the people that testified before this committee.
Okay. So, Senator Hoffman.
Senator Hoffman, I appreciate those comments. I'll just reiterate that was the bulk of the testimony yesterday, was that Section 40. And
yeah.
If you could address that, Commissioner.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I know there's yesterday in the testimony there was a lot of discussion on water authorizations, and I think in some ways it was a very useful discussion. It can be quite confusing, I think, to some degree. But as was discussed yesterday, there's three types of authorizations that DNR and Fish and Game, closely coordinated with, work on that go to the Alaskan public. There is the temporary water use permits, TWEPs, that's what we call them. There's water rights, and then there's water reservations. So the first two, water rights and TWEPs, are about removing water from any body of water. And anyone can apply for those. Those are by far and away the vast majority of what people apply for in the state and what DNR grants. By far, the vast majority. Nothing in this bill affects those. So anyone can come to DNR for a temporary water use permit, tribe, village, company, miners, or a water right. So on the TWEPs, we literally get hundreds, we're trying to check, if not thousands a year. And in the letter that I sent to Representative Edgman, footnote one in that letter just gives a whole host of different examples of those. We get those out very quickly. They're very important for the economy, for individuals, for homeowners, for I'm sure Nana's applied for some. Then water rights are a much more intensive application because the process by which they're granted, those are permanent rights for a company, for an individual. Once they get a water right, that is a permanent right that enables them to withdraw a certain amount of water from a body of water. And again, those can be applied for by anyone, and there's no change in the bill that addresses those two. So the vast majority of water use, water rights, water authorizations, the vast, vast majority that occur in Alaska are not affected by the proposed bill. So the water reservations, that's the only issue, that's the issue. And we don't get nearly as many of those applications. And the application process itself is very intensive. 3 to 5 years of data collection itself. We work in close coordination with Fish and Game. In fact, they are the biggest applicant for us, mostly to protect fish habitat. And as I mentioned earlier, we're making good progress on that. And as this committee knows, the only change in the bill is to have the applications for reservations to come formally from public agencies to manage the public resource. And I do want to emphasize this because it's very important. Individuals, companies, NGOs, tribes certainly can initiate the application process through an agency. Fish and Game does that already. But Senator Halford, I think, asked a really good question yesterday. Well, what's the concern? What's the problem? And I think it was a good question, and I don't think we answered it well. I think there's been some confusion just on how these different things operate. One of the things I mentioned yesterday is the state is blessed with so much water. In many ways, we haven't had any of the kind of battles that you've seen in the lower 48 over water use between states, within states, heck, even between the United States and Mexico, because we have so much abundance. And we don't anticipate that changing much, which is in many ways a good thing. But there is a legal trend that is developing that we are troubled by. And that is already certain water reservation applicants are making the case in court that we can't issue any other water use authorizations, like a TWUP or a right, until we first adjudicate the reservation application from the body of water in question, which could take years. So we think that that could be an avenue for halting the timely issuance of TWUPs and other water rights, which we think would not be in the interest of any Alaskans. And that is an issue, and it's an issue that we've become concerned about because we do have a significant backlog on the water reservation applications. So, Senator, I don't know if that addresses your question, but I just wanted to clarify the different water rights and water uses and water authorizations, the vast, vast majority that are used here would not be affected by the bill.
Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
Well, I understand that, Mr. Chairman, and I'm glad that you mentioned it again. The reserved water rights, they are not that many. And you say individuals and others can go apply through an agency. That's the problem. The Constitution says that we do. We have that right. Alaskans have that right. We should not have to go through another agency. We should go directly to our government, directly to request our water rights, and not be treated as second-class citizens in our own state. That is the crux of the matter. You said rightfully so that there's a lot of water in the state. So why can't we go forward to our government directly and have them deal directly instead of through an agency for the rights that we have in our Constitution? And if it isn't that many applicants, then we should just eliminate it and keep the intent of what our Constitution allows. That is the issue. Don't make it harder for Alaskans, which you are doing, requiring them to go through an agency. Let's make it simpler. Let's work for the people. Let's streamline this operation. We've heard it time and time again at this table. We need to streamline things. You're not streamlining things here for the people of Alaska.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, if a court says we need to finish getting through our water reservation applications before we can get through, before we can issue temporary water use permits, that's not going to streamline anything.
Well, you need to figure out some way to address that problem and not slap the door on individuals' rights to access water.
That would slap the door on individuals' rights to access water. That's exactly what that problem is. Okay. Is what we're worried about.
Obviously, we got a difference of opinion here. So, is there other questions, Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, I just ask that as you, as the chairman of this brain trust of the legislature committee, that all the questions go through you, and that you continue to hold this committee in the process here in the most respectable manner, because obviously, this is a very passionate bill. It's got constitutional concerns. We're getting legal opinions on it. I've already wrote you a letter and said we need to have the respectable way to do this is to put it into a subcommittee. So I'm asking you as the chairman to make sure we continue to hold to the rules that make this so that passions and things stay within control and wisdom prevails.
Very, very good. Thank you, Senator Olson. And, you know, before I make that decision, though, I wanted to hear some of the dialogue, some of the concerns. And that's why I let Senator Hoffman and Commissioner go on maybe a little longer than I should have, but I thought it was a good discussion. And we'll certainly take your suggestion about a subcommittee under advisement. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Senator Chair. Regarding the reservations, is the issue looking more into the future than the past, meaning do you see a from your perspective, do you see a troubling trend of individuals or groups moving to reserve water rights in an effort to block certain projects, certain economic development? Do you see that? Is the concern on the department that in the future that this mechanism may be used to not necessarily reserve water for waters for whatever purpose, but is being used as a tool to prevent projects or other projects from going forward? Is that part of the issue from your concern or from your perspective?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, it's very. I don't want to try to get involved with regard to the intentions of people who are applying for water reservations. That's not what we're focused on. It is a bit of an issue more in the future. And I want to be very respectful to Senator Hoffman, who I have utmost respect for. We do have a lot of water, and so there haven't been the battles before, but the trend of having to address the water reservation applications before we can do work on the other rights that are water for Alaskans in a much more expeditious manner is something that has been a concern, and the issue also of, you know, although it's not granted in perpetuity because there's usually a 10-year review period, a water reservation is more or less kind of granted in perpetuity, and we think that because that's a very large responsibility, having that being managed by a borough, a municipality, state agency for the future is the way we think that should be done, as opposed to another entity, because that's a big responsibility.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Kelly.
Commissioner, I want real short answers to these. So how long did you say it takes to do a reservation? Generally?
3 to 5 years just to collect the data.
Okay. So if you have one creek that has, say, 30 water reservations on it, can you do those all concurrently, or is this something that in kind of some absurd math could actually end up to 90 years of research?
Senator Kelly,
sure.
Chair, this is Wynn. when we adjudicate reservations, they have to specify which reach of a river, so you wouldn't do, let's say, the entire Yukon River. There would be stretches of it.
Okay. So I guess what I'm going to is, a specific project, and then people just start pounding away with water reservations on the creeks around that area. Are you able to carry those research and the due diligence that goes around, along with a reservation, are you able to do all those concurrently, or... when you have 30 water reservations on a creek, is it going to take dozens of years to get through those reservations?
Senator Kelly, through the chair, the issue is that if you had multiple reservations for the same segment, then you could do the adjudication concurrently. If you have multiple segments of a river, depending on your staff availability of time to go through the adjudication of all the data that needs to be reviewed and analyzed, you might or might not be able to do it concurrently. But I wouldn't be able to commit that we could always do it concurrently.
Go ahead.
So there could be a scenario. Actually, there could be a strategy to select make water rights reservations in given areas by environmental groups who want to stop all development. There could be a strategy where they could shut down a pretty large section of Alaska for dozens of years, if they did it right, by applying for water reservations in different segments around a project. Would that be correct?
Senator Kelly, through the chair, this is Wynn. The issue is that there could be some strategy that somebody could employ, but a lot depends on what the courts rule in some of these court cases that are currently underway and things that might be filed. So I wouldn't be able to predict exactly how successful a strategy might be.
Well, through the chair, if a court comes back and says you have to get through these applications first before you could, say, grant a temporary water use permit on the same body, that's going to, I mean, look at the numbers of temporary water use permits that we grant for everything from village,
sure,
villages to, you know, small projects to municipalities. That is a concern that we have.
So essentially, what you could make the case that we have a flaw in the way we currently do business, and I don't think it's a constitutional flaw. I think it's just a statutory flaw that allows outside groups to control the length of time it takes to develop a given project based on their ability to make water rights applications and play the courts nearly endlessly, depending on the number of suits and, the number of applications and the response of the courts. And when we talk about the Constitution, it says that the beneficial uses, concurrent or otherwise, as prescribed by law, and we're the ones who make the laws. So the Constitution allows us to make the laws around the water rights reservations, correct? Or not water rights,
so we have
water
a,
reservations.
We have a Assistant Attorney General on the line.
That's right.
Probably answer that better than...
Yeah, actually, we have a couple of attorneys online here, Ashley Brown and John Baker.
Okay, just in conclusion.
Chairman,
so,
on that point.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Wilson.
Commissioner, correct me if I'm wrong. If they do try to, if some non-NGO that's against development tries to go ahead and tie up, say, the Yukon River, they can go. The department can go right to the court and ask for a summary judgment and probably rule in their favor, don't you think? So they wouldn't have that.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe right now anyone can apply for a water reservation.
No, I'm talking about trying to resolve the situation so they don't tie up the Yukon River by the Greenpeace or whoever's trying to stop the development. You can go right to the court and have a summary judgment given in favor of the department. So we don't.
I believe that the process. Help me out here. If there's, and maybe the attorneys can answer. If there's an application that comes in, we have to. I don't think we can boot any application. We have to look at the applications right now on water reservations, adjudicate them, and issue them. Now we don't always have to grant them. An application for a water reservation doesn't mean they get the certificate to reserve a certain amount of water. They're not the same thing.
Actually,
one of the concerns we're seeing in the courts is just the application process itself. Courts are starting to look at the issue whether or not we have to fully adjudicate it before we can do anything else in terms of any other water authorization with that body of water, and that should be a troubling trend for every member of this committee.
Actually, Commissioner, I'd just like to go and apologize for interrupting the senior senator that is asking the question, and I side with him that one or two sentences will suffice as opposed to an explanation.
Okay, very good. Senator Kelly, did you want to continue?
Well, I try to get my hands around this. I mean, it seems to have gotten more complicated than it needs to be. We're getting attacked by outside groups who are shutting the state down. And this is their most recent clever way to do it. We have the ability in law. The Constitution does not prevent us from changing the way we administer water reservations. And that's what we're trying to do here. I don't believe there's a constitutional question here. I'm not a constitutional lawyer. We're all very lucky for that. But it seems pretty clear to me that the Constitution gives the legislature the authority by law, that means us, to on how we administer water reservations. The outside groups are using this as a clever way to stop us from development. Just one in hundreds that we've seen, or certainly dozens that we've seen over the years. And thank you, and thank the governor for having the courage to respond to these groups, because we've got to stop this nonsense. You know, we looked at the other bill that went on for 10 years to get an oil and gas lease. That's just too long. It's ridiculous. are we're getting our rear ends kicked by other jurisdictions in development, whether it's mining or whether it's oil or a number of things. We're getting our rear ends kicked because companies come up here and they go, oh my gosh, now what do we got to do to engage in capitalism? And this is a good way to set them back on their heels, the environmentalists. And if they want an actual water reservation somewhere for a legitimate cause, like I think the two senators here have come up with on a number of examples that they've used over this debate, then that's fine. They can still do it under this piece of legislation. Nothing stops that. What we're trying to do is stop outside groups from killing Alaska, because that's what they're doing right now. Thank you.
Was there a question there, Senator Kelly?
No, there was a comment, because we've sat through dozens of people testifying, some of them saying absurd things. One of the things I heard the other day was amazing. A woman said, this is a democracy, not a representative government. I'm shaking my head. Are we teaching that in schools nowadays? Is that what people think we actually have, is a democracy, and we don't have a representative government? Because we do have a representative government, and a representative government has the right to discuss these kinds of issues and change things, which is what we're doing. And I we dance around the issue up here to try to talk about what this bill isn't. What it is a response from an organized attack from the outside to shut Alaska down. And thank you for it.
Well, I appreciate that. At this point in time, let's save the comments for when we decide what we're going to do with the bill. If there's a specific questions for these three experts, let's do the questions now, and then we'll do the comments later. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to everyone who testified and have great concerns about a person, Commissioner, can you talk about when I asked the question yesterday about how does our law differ from other laws throughout the state, and if you could just give me that response again, are people in other jurisdictions in America allowed to make water reservations under their statutes? Not that that's a good example. I just want to know the answer.
Go ahead, Senator.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, the answer, I believe, for every other state is no.
In Alaska, we value a direct local control as much as we can provide. In everything that we do, that's what we're talking about now. So when we look reflectively at what we've done since the statute's been in effect since 1986. Is that correct?
Senator, through the chair, I believe somewhere in the 80s, I don't have the exact date.
The Resource Committee said 1986 at some point, so that's what's in my notes. How much does it cost for a person? Well, I guess the next question would be, has a person ever qualified for a water reservation in the state of Alaska with the openness that we have for the process?
Senator, through the chair, we have not completed any adjudication fully on a application from a person. Therefore, I wouldn't be able to tell you whether they qualified yet.
So we've never in the state's history had a person make it all the way through the process. So can I ask about some of the challenges there might be for a person? I heard about time, that it takes 3 years because there's lots of data. What kind of data would a person have to go collect to be able to walk this through the process?
Senator, through the chair, the type of data that's collected depends on the resource you're trying to protect. There's four different types of water reservations. But if you're talking about fish habitat, for instance, then one of the things you're going to have to do is you're going to have to find out the volumes of water that come over a period of time. And statistically, that usually is about 5 years. And the 3 years comes in of the minimum time, or the maximum time that they say that you need to put in the data. But oftentimes what happens is people are collecting data before they submit the application. But it's usually 5 years of data that we're looking for, and that gives you a statistical balance of the trends of different years being a drier year and a wetter year and that type of thing. Then there's also, where are the species that you're trying to protect? Are they spawning in that location? Is it, what type of species are there? Because they all have different requirements. So there's that type of evaluation that goes in the data collection.
Mr. Chairman, if I might. So if an Alaskan wanted to make this water reservation, how would they find out about the criteria that the department would look at for each individual species? So where would an Alaskan go? Is there a library that they could go to, or how would they access the data to meet the hurdle that they need to do for the information to gather for the department, for the federal government, or whoever would set that hurdle for them?
Senator, through the chair, because we work so closely with Fish and Game, that the logical thing would be, besides talking to our adjudicator that deals with water reservations, if it starts getting the question of scientific, of what does the species need, we would redirect them to Fish and Game. Fish and Game would, their staff would speak to whoever that person is and inform them of that type of information.
Follow?
Commissioner Campbell, if as an Alaskan I'm trying to reserve a water right for my subsistence, a water reservation, who in your staff, and would there be a list? Is there a list of requirements, or is it specific to the individual request of what I would need to protect a Chinook or a particular fish that was important to my livelihood? Where would I go to find out what that was a criteria?
Through the chair, Senator, we have what we call a water shop. It's housed in our sport fish division, and it's made up of staff who they are tasked with this type of work primarily on behalf of the department, because we do a lot of this. However, if a member of the public comes to us and is interested in pursuing one of these reservations on their own, we lay out for them every data requirement that they need to collect in order to eventually complete the application at DNR. So we have people in our department who are subject matter experts who assist the public in navigating this process.
Right, Mike. Go ahead. Commissioner Campbell, how long does that take? How long is the list? What will an Alaskan have to do on their own? You've provided them the information. It will take them time. Is there a standard form that you provide Alaskans to do this?
Through the chair, Senator, there's two possible approaches. Somebody could indeed do it on their own. What we do at other times, and what I think is a preferred approach, is the person or organization gathers the data, and we help them decide what data to gather, we review all that data, and we assist them with the application. The time limitation is generally the time it takes to actually do the stream gauging and determine the volume of water in the stream, rather than any type of backlog in our water shop of a list of people who are looking to be assisted.
Go ahead, sir.
Commissioner, is there a checklist, or is each situation different?
Through the chair, Senator, I would have to go back and check with staff about whether they actually have a document that lays it all out. Certainly, they have the information and can provide it to people that are looking for it, but I don't know if there's a form that they use. I can find that out for you.
Question?
To either commissioner, is there... How do we make sure, if an Alaskan were going forward, that we're measuring and accurately quantifying different data points that we're looking for? How do we secure that an Alaskan is taken care of with the quality of the information that's collected? So if we're available to provide the specific data points, how does an Alaskan, what process do they have to follow? And then how is their data deemed to be accurate? Can I go out with a ruler, stick it in the stream, come back to you, log it, and you're going to accept that as the right volume and...
So, through the chair, Senator, Lynn may want to talk about the review that, that takes place within DNR, but generally what I would say is that there's standard equipment that's used for stream gauging to determine water flows, that, that we assist people in setting up a project that's going to gather accurate data, and we assist in reviewing the data if they want us to when they're finished, to ensure that they have what they need and that it's accurate.
Senator, through the chair, this is Wynn. The aspect of what takes the longest is the stream gauging. We typically have people working through USGS because they are the stream gauge experts to make sure that they meet the right quality for their stream gauging. And there are standards that USGS has about stream gauging and how it's measured and to make sure it's accurate and statistically valid. And we will inform folks up front of what's necessary. Secondarily, in the statute actually prescribes things that are required, but it doesn't get down to saying, what's the type of equipment that you need to use? That's where we get talking with the applicant, and the best thing for people to do is talk to us first so that whether it's a question about the scientific aspects of the fish resource or if it's about the water resource, we can tell them how to accurately get that information so that they don't get to the end of the data collection and have invalid data. We would rather them correctly collect the data.
Two more. So you're making my point is that a person would have to come to the department or a government entity almost every time to collect the accurate data. They probably would not go out and purchase the equipment, but maybe a person has the resources to do that. Can you give us any ballpark on what the cost of a piece of equipment would be or that they would need? Would a person go buy that? Is it cost prohibitive, or can a person, an Alaskan, go do this without a government agency and be successful? That can they walk through it themselves?
Senator, through the chair, most people actually do a contract with companies to do the gauging because typically a person or even an organization doesn't have their own equipment. Oftentimes, they'll contract with USGS to do the work, and so every application, even from the persons, goes through the government agencies for assistance in developing the plan and to get started on their application.
Last question.
Mr. Chairman, I was trying to walk through the point. If I were an Alaskan trying to do this, I would have been at a state agency every step of the way, that the agency isn't the blockade. The agency is the assistance to accomplish what almost everyone is asking to do, but there is great fear that the agency is somehow going to do something that isn't in Alaska's best interest. And I understand that fear. I just, we're there and we have not seen water reservations reserved by people. In every case, the state usually steps in to help the individual to accomplish the task. At least in the lists that we've been provided, there is a different agency that has come to the aid of an Alaskan on every count. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, obviously, we need more discussion on this and need more time. If we do a subcommittee on this, it's not to kill the bill, which some people think a subcommittee means. It would only be to help fix it and make it more acceptable to the committee. I'm not sure we're going to go that route yet. Senator Dunleavy has been gracious enough to pull his request for SJR-9, which is the school choice bill. So that will free up some time this weekend, either tomorrow or Saturday, to continue the discussion on this. And we'll let you know exactly, both commissioners, when we'll be able to fit that in. But today we need to conclude and move on now to the capital budget.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just want one final, and it kind of relates to what Senator Fairclough had mentioned.
Very brief,
and it's an issue that came. It was one of the other issues that we didn't get to address came up yesterday, and that's with regard to the issues of tribes. And we certainly, whether it's from the governor, John Mueller, in my previous jobs as AG or in this DNR commissioner position, working with the Native community, whether it's tribes, regional corporations, boroughs, has been one of our highest priorities, and that certainly will continue under this. In the letter, Representative Edgman, we talked about this, and we're already in discussions with TCC on, you know, how to look at deepening the relationship on these water authorization issues. I know it came up a lot yesterday. I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, very good. And just to reiterate, I know this is a priority bill of the governor's, and so we will give it the due diligence and priority that the governor wants. But we also had the House Bill 4 coming over. It is over. It's in resources, which is a priority, of course, of the speaker. And, of course, SJ 9 was a priority of Senator Dunleavy. So we're getting backed up here a little bit, and I do appreciate Senator Dunleavy freeing up a little time here to take up these very important issues. But right now we do need to get a capital budget done. So let's take a brief at ease, and then we'll take up the capital budget. All right, we're going to bring the Senate Finance meeting back to order. Before we get started here, let me just announce that the Senate Bill 74, the University of Alaska Building Fund, I do want to hear that. We're obviously going to run out of time this morning. So let's move that to the first thing this afternoon at 1:30. Hopefully the President Gamble can still join us this afternoon. Okay, excellent. And that is Senator Kelly's bill. I'm assuming Senator Kelly's okay with that. You okay with that?
Okay.
Okay, great. All right, and then we do have some board extensions that we need to take up as well this afternoon. Marine pilots, public accountancy, and then this is a Senate Finance bill. We'll revisit the COP on the Alaska Native Medical Center housing. So that'll be this afternoon. So right now we're taking up Senate Bill 18. We do have a new CS. Senator Kelly.
Brief at ease.
All right, we're back. Before we get started, though, if anybody wants a copy of the CS, I suggest you get it now because it gets a little disruptive once we get started in the process if everyone is running over there to get a copy of the CS. So it's my understanding the copies are out there, so grab one. Okay, so Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Finance Committee report CS for Senate Bill 18 Finance version 28-GS1798/P as amended from committee with an individual
Object.
Not the bill first. It's working document.
Working document.
Oh, the note said. All right. As a working document.
All right. Let's take it at ease. Okay. Senate Finance is back to order. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Finance Committee report CS.
Senator Kelly, can you withdraw?
Let me withdraw this motion.
All right, briefly.
I'd like to withdraw my previous motion, Mr. Chairman.
The Senate Finance meeting is back in order. Senator Kelly.
May I withdraw my previous motion?
Okay. Any objections to the withdrawal of the previous motion? Seeing none. Okay. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt CS for SB 18 Finance version 28-GS1798/P as our working document.
Okay, and I will object for purposes of discussion. This is dated 4/3/13, and looks like the author is Martin. So hopefully that's the copy we're all working off of. Okay, so I have objected to the motion. I have my chief staff, trustee budget maker here, Suzanne Armstrong, who has been working tirelessly, endlessly to try to get this all together. I appreciate that. Suzanne, or sorry, Miss, did I call you Cunningham? Okay. Ms. Armstrong, if you would please go through the bill and describe the changes in the CS, and then I understand when the CS came back, there's a couple minor changes we need to make, and we'll make that through the amendment process. So, Ms. Armstrong, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Suzanne Armstrong, staff to Senator Kevin Meyer in the Senate Finance Committee. The changes that are incorporated in the P version of the bill, there's a number of them. However, I'll walk through roughly what the major changes were. In Section 1 of the bill, which is the FY 2014 capital budget section of the bill, working with staff and senators, we scrubbed the number section pretty hard, looking at title changes for projects, ensuring that they were accurate, ensuring that the grantees were accurate in terms of municipality, named recipients, and unincorporated, and also looked at dollar amounts for accuracies. There were some changes in order to clean up a few titles of the projects, who the grantees were, and appropriations. This exercise resulted in a reduction of $65,000 in unrestricted general funds initially. Amendment number one will clear that up. There were two project additions in Section 1. If I can direct members' attention to page 12, line 8 through 10. This is the addition of the Juneau Airport Equipment Facility for $3 million. It was brought to our attention by the senator from Juneau that without the funding, they could possibly lose federal receipts and other ability for federal reimbursement for future equipment purchases and replacement, and this project was added to Section 1. On page 30, lines 16 through 18, is the addition of Kwithla K-12 replacement school design, planning, and foundation work for $25 million, and the fund source is the REA fund. This addition keeps with the commitment of this legislature to fulfill the Kasaili School Settlement Agreement. This will allow for work to begin on the school, which after Nightmute, which is fully funded in the FY14 capital budget, is the next Kasaili school on the school construction list. After the remainder of the funding is secured in 2014, which is FY2015, there will be one remaining Kasaili school, which is Kivalina. There are no changes in Section 4, which is the FY2013 supplemental capital section. There are no changes in Section 7, which is FY2013 supplemental operating section. There were a number of language section changes that occurred. The major addition is a new Section 17.
Page, please.
88.
I don't believe you, Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman.
What page is that, please?
It's page 88.
Okay.
Lines 10 through 16.
Great, thank you.
I'm rolling again.
This section pertains to the University of Alaska Anchorage purchasing and improving a new office complex in Anchorage and selling a current asset of the university. This is included at the request of the University of Alaska and Senator Kelly's office. There was a small change that was made to the fund capitalization section.
Mr. Chairman, what was that? I didn't catch what you
said. I think she's giving us, getting the page for us here. And then, Ms. Fairclough, I think you have a question about the previous one. We'll come back to that.
I don't have a question.
Okay. Looked like you had a question.
Which appears on page 90, lines 17 through 18. This appeared initially in the fund capitalization section, which was in section 21. It was moved to section 22, which is the fund transfer section, because it is accurately a fund transfer and not a fund capitalization.
That's page 90, line 17, correct?
17 through 18.
Yeah.
There were several legislative requests for reappropriations in individual Senate districts that were added to the P version of the bill as well, resulting in a net zero to the bottom line of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we were pretty flexible. If the senators wanted to change their reappropriations to different items, it didn't matter to us because it didn't change the overall total. Okay, brief at ease. Okay, we're back. Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, I know that when we had public testimony that we had heard from the community of Hoonah regarding a medical facility, and they had they needed $1.9 million, if I recall, for Matt to leverage money from the Denali Commission to complete a project. I believe $6 million was on the line, and I'm just wanting to see whether that was addressed inside this budget.
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, that is addressed, and you are correct on the dollar amount. They need approximately 1.9, and members can find on page 104, line 16 through 20, a $2 million reappropriation for the construction of the Hoonah Health Center.
And again, that was working with the senator from that area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Continue, Ms. Armstrong.
So, in summary, Mr. Chairman, the Senate version P, the total bill, and I can direct members to the multi-year agency summary report that was produced by the Legislative Finance Division.
Indeed, this handout, two-page handout everybody should have.
Yes. Total funds of $1.9 billion, and it breaks down as $836 million in unrestricted general funds, $152 million in designated general funds, $78 million in other funds, and $928 million in federal funds.
So column 8, then, is the total of the $2,025,000,000?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Column 8 is the total for the CS that is before the committee, and the $2 billion is the agency operations. If you move down and address the statewide items under fund capitalization, debt service, and special appropriations, it actually comes to a total of $1.9 billion.
Okay, 1.994. Oh, yeah, just under $2 billion. Okay. I'm glad you're trying to make it sound smaller by saying 1.9, but it is actually closer to $2 billion. Okay, just want to be open and transparent here. Okay. Now you have there's a couple amendments we need to make yet to this, so I guess I'll go ahead and move amendment one. Somebody should object.
Object.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Okay, amendment one, Ms. Armstrong, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we were finalizing the bill and checking for accuracy, there was a statewide organization that had an appropriation for $665,000, and we thought that took care of a particular need in the Fairbanks area, and we discovered that it did not. So we reduced the original appropriation to $600,000 in the bill, and then inserted a new project, This amendment proposes to insert a new project for the Fairbanks Community Food Bank at $65,000, which will actually eliminate the $65,000 GF difference that's shown on the member spreadsheet.
Okay, very good. I think we tried to just lump all the food bank items together, and we found out that the Fairbanks Food Bank is separate from the main one in Anchorage, so that's all we're doing here.
Making Mr. Sure. Chairman, yep. There's actually a second part to this amendment as well.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
On the amendment, lines 10 through 17 is a legislative reapprope requested by the member from Senate N pertaining to a reappropriation of money from one road project to another road project in the district.
Okay. And again, no change in funds, just redirecting the money to a different project.
That's correct.
Okay. Any questions on this amendment?
I remove my objection.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Okay. So hold on, Senator Dunleavy. If people want copies of these amendments, they are passing them out. So, again, we'll try to make this as least disruptive as possible. Okay. Did you have a question on Amendment 1? So Amendment 1 passes. Amendment number 2 by Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 2.
And I'll, yep. Okay. Go ahead, Senator Dunleavy.
Amendment number 2, page 14, on lines 20 through 23, delete the entire sentence. It is the intent of the legislature that this appropriation be used only for a specific purpose and that any funds remaining may be reappropriated only to the warm storage fire station in the Crystal Lakes area and may not be appropriated for any other project, borough project. And then also on the same page, page 14, on lines 29 through 32, delete the entire sentence. Is the intent of the legislature that this appropriation be used only for the specific purpose and that any funds remaining may be reappropriated only to the warm storage fire station on 4 Mile Road and may not be appropriated for any other project, borough project. It's a language change. There's no money change.
Okay. Very good. Ms. Armstrong, any comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, we received, with the copy of the bill this morning, we did receive a memo pertaining to this, in that the concern that they raised is that the Matsu Borough may only use the $350,000 for the Crystal Lakes area or the $388,000 for the 4 Mile Road, because that is what is stipulated in the legislation, which will be enacted into law. And so it prevents the Matsu Borough from using the funds in any other manner. If there were to be a reappropriation, the Matsu Borough would have to come back to the legislature to either have a scope change on the project title or to have the money reappropriated, which is subject to legislative authority. And so they thought that this language was redundant, not necessary.
Okay, very good. Do you withdraw your objection, Senator Faircloth?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. If there's no other objections, then Amendment 2 passes as well. Was there any other amendments to the CS? Okay, if not, Senator Hoffman, did you have a...
Mr. Chairman, I have a letter from... If it can be disseminated to the members. I have a letter from the Executive Director from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation regarding the elimination of $5 million to the Village Safe Water Infrastructure Project protection projects, and I would request that this letter be included in the it's basically a description of examples be included into the record.
Okay, very good, Senator Hoffman. I appreciate that, and that's a concern to me and other members as well. We weren't and didn't go down the list. Ms. Armstrong, before I say something I'm not supposed to, you want to comment on this?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the program that Senator Hoffman is talking about is a program that originally received funding in fiscal year 2013 for research and development opportunities and new technologies. Is that correct, Senator Hoffman?
That is correct, and the reasoning was that this is quite an expensive proposition, and the individuals were looking at ways to try to make the Village Safe Water program more effective and less expensive to the state. And we felt that continue to spend the $5 million could potentially save the state of Alaska millions of dollars. And I wanted to include this into the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. I appreciate you bringing that to the committee's attention. Okay. Any other questions, comments, concerns? Okay, let's take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back, and I think we still have one more conceptual amendment. Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, I move a conceptual amendment that under Section 49, we add reference to Section 4 and Section 7 regarding the effective date. Suzanne, is that of the supplemental? Is that what you said? Yes.
Okay, what you want to give us a page?
It is Section 49 is on page 110.
Okay, last page.
Correct.
Okay. You want to? Okay. Did everybody understand the
Section 49? There needs to be reference to Section 4 and Section 7 regarding the effective date of the supplemental. And
Okay.
Suzanne, do you want to fill this in?
I'll object. Suzanne, or Ms. Armstrong, do you want to discuss this conceptual amendment and why it's necessary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Rehfeld from the Office of Management and Budget pointed out that the supplemental sections in the bill, which are Section 4 and Section 7, did not have an earlier effective date clause. This would provide that those sections become effective April 14, 2013.
Okay, any questions? If not, then I remove my objection. Okay, so we have two amendments and one conceptual amendment to the CS. Is there any other comments, suggestions at this time? Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, I just had a question. She just said that the effective date was April 14, 2014 for the conceptual amendment, but on page or line 8 on 110, it says 2013. Are those supposed to be the same dates?
Ms. Armstrong.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, it should be 2013. I am sorry.
Yeah, I think you did say 14. Okay.
I'm sorry.
2013. Thank you, Senator Olson, for catching that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? All I can say is, you know, this is my fifth capital budget, and it was definitely the hardest one. So, and I think I've made everyone equally mad, so I think it's a pretty good capital budget. And I appreciate everybody's cooperation and sacrifice that they made to help put this together. It was quite a change going from almost a $1 billion add last year to a little over $200 million. So appreciate everyone tightening the belt a little bit and making this happen. And certainly want to thank Ms. Armstrong, who worked endlessly and tirelessly on the process. Senator Hawken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank you for your hard work, particularly on the Casale case and including the Quikrup School, although it is not a school that is in my district anymore. It's in Senator Stevens' district. Next year we will be completing the list of Casale schools, and by the inclusion of the $25 million to do the design and foundation work, this will mean that the school will be built at least one year, possibly 2 years earlier, and I thank you for that.
Great, Senator Hoffman, and I look forward to finishing that school next year, and I'll promise to work on the pronunciation.
Quithlick,
okay. Okay, Senator Kelly, and then we'll go around. Senator Kelly?
Just congratulations, Mr. Chairman. Good job on this to you and your staff. Appreciate the hard work and how attentive you were to all the requests. And I don't think people are angry. I think they're very surprised, not surprised, but they were very pleased with how your office treated everyone's requests.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I maintain my sincere appreciation to Ms. Armstrong from yesterday. I did read it, and I've read it again, and I know it was a yeoman's effort on your staff and yourself, and I'd like to compliment the chairman. Everybody got a little lump of coal, but everybody got a little something that they needed as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. And I would, again, encourage people to read it another time. Even though it's thinner than it was last year, there's still a lot of information there. Then it's easy to make a typo or a simple mistake. Senator Dunlap.
Just very brief. On behalf of Senate District D, I want to thank the committee and yourself for the hard work on this and your staff.
Great. Thank you. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate, as everyone else does, all of your staff's efforts, specifically Ms. Armstrong's, as well as Legislative Finance, who has worked 24/7 at times to try to turn individual legislators' requests into numbers for the general public to see. I would like to echo and appreciate the process. Alaska's fiscal future is dependent on good policy and good planning, And this budget is trying to respond to almost a billion-dollar shift in what we anticipated. We thought that we would come into this session with the planning and the savings from past legislative bodies with $500 million of surplus money. When we arrived, the price per barrel of oil has fluctuated below what we anticipated in our revenue forecast book, and production has declined. Also, leaving us then with, when we at least first got to session, with a $400 million shortfall, a big swing. And this budget is trying to be responsible and responsive to Alaska's needs to try to invest where we started, your goals, Mr. Chairman. I'll let you speak to those. But it is less. We received in CAPSIS, Ms. Armstrong, how many billions of dollars worth of requests across our state?
$3.9 billion, Senator Fairclough.
$3.9 billion of requests from throughout Alaska. And just in the public testimony alone, we had almost $1 billion worth of requests coming in from people across the state. This is a responsible reaction to a fiscal projection that needs to have great care, and I just appreciate everyone's involvement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Fairclough. Yes, I forgot to state the goals when we started the capital budget are the same as we said at the beginning of the year. We want to maintain our existing assets, finish some of those projects that are in the various phases, and then try to help in some critical projects in various regions throughout the state. Again, you're going to read in the reappros, we did allow some people maybe to give money to their schools, so we may have deviate a little bit from that, but that was certainly our intent. And I also want to thank Rob and David Teal here behind me, because I know when I left last night at midnight, Ms. Armstrong was still working with these folks. Appreciate the Ledge Finance help as well. So with that, I'm going to remove my objection to the CS ask sent.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I know there's been great anticipation on the buildings for the university, mm-hmm. and I just want to state for the record that I continue to be committed to try to see if that can be a possibility during this legislative cycle, but it will take the work of both bodies as well as the governor to make that happen for us. We have tried to keep our eye on the ball in a way that we're spending. But we know, and I'm committed to the university and to the engineering buildings that have hope for funding, but truly believe we have to have the other body engaged in that conversation before we can move that direction further. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Fairclough, for bringing that that subject up, because we are all getting a lot of emails now on that, and everyone at this table, I think it's safe to say, support both engineering colleges and support both of them moving forward. It was just that to do both of them, to finish them, was going to be $109 million. And if you only have $200 million, if your total adds are $200 million, that would have been over half of it. And so we just couldn't do that. But we do and will continue to look for a way to maybe keep both colleges moving forward. Ms. Armstrong.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard bells ringing, so I know that you're all anxious to get to the floor. But I did have a couple of closing remarks to make. I appreciate everybody's thoughtfulness in thanking me, but it actually takes a team to do this, and I'd like to acknowledge that team. Senator Dunleavy, your staff, Sheila Peterson and John Wood, Senator Bishop, Mike Smith and Pete Feldman, Senator Fairclough, Laura Pierre and Susan Wallen, Senator Hoffman, Pat Walker and Tim Grusendorf, Senator Olson, Denise Liccioli, Senator Kelly, Mr. James Armstrong, thank you. And also in your office, Mr. Chairman Weston Eiler, who's a huge help. Legislative Legal Services, Hillary Martin, who was our bill drafter, and the entire Legal Services team for their countless hours, for answering absurd questions over and over and last night over again, and making this entire process possible. David Teal and Amanda Ryder from Legislative Finance, Amy Foskett, who's the programmer that works on the CAPSIS system, and certainly to my lifeline, Rob Carpenter. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Armstrong, for bringing that up. And as you mentioned, almost $4 billion worth of requests in CAPSIS. So there was a lot of activity in CAPSIS, but I think that process is working. And I want to thank Ms. Rayfield because she worked with us as well. We did make quite a few reductions to the governor's capital budget as well, I appreciate her working with us on those reductions. So with that, are we forgetting anything? Okay, Senator Kelly, you ready?
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for Senate Bill number 18, Finance, version 28-GS1798/P, as amended from committee with individual recommendations.
Very good. And that was two amendments and one conceptual amendment. Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, bill moves out of committee. And please stay around to sign the recommendation sheet, and then we'll adjourn now till 1:30.